Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Be Radiant Radio. You are made of light and you are made to shine. Positive, uplifting, and helpful. Welcome to the show where you'll get informational and inspirational ideas on how to unleash your potential, get what you want in life, and shine like you're meant to.
Hi, I'm your host, Angela Loeb. Welcome. Today we're going to talk a little bit about the nature of worry, how it's inevitable. And since it's inevitable, we're going to talk about how to put it to good use. And, of course, we'll also talk about how to let it go when it's outlived its use or had no use to begin with. Now, you know, maybe I should have called this program Worry is Inevitable, but it doesn't have to control you or something like that. Now, why do I say that? Because let's be honest, even though we think we'd like to eliminate worry, to stop worry altogether, the truth is that we won't ever completely eliminate worry. It's part of being human. We're going to be worrying. And because worry comes from fear, and fear is not going to go away, well, you know, they go hand in hand. Worry and fear just not going to go away. In fact, you need to have it because it actually serves you. You might be asking now, how? How does worry serve me? It's supposed to give me, you know, heart attacks and hypertension and all kinds of health problems. True, worry can do that to you, especially if you're not using it in a constructive manner. But, you know, first of all, let me tell you, there are a few reasons why worry is something that you can use. And first of all, I think the worry that you have, it can allow you to show someone how much you care about them. We worry about them. We care about them. I'm a mom, and I'm never, ever not going to stop worrying about my kid, even when she's a mother herself. Heck, I'll probably worry about her more when she's a mother. I will worry about her because I care about her. And I'm particularly interested in stopping, you know, I'm not particularly interested in that. I mean, I really want, I'm okay with worrying about her. It's okay. What I do want to stop, though, is the effect it will have on me. And I also don't want it to be something that becomes so pervasive that it affects my relationship with her. I mean, I think it can become a problem when I allow worry to consume me or if I allow the worry to interfere with a healthy relationship with her. It would be a problem, I think, if I told her I was worried about her and she assured me I shouldn't worry, and yet I still obsess. So there's healthy worrying to show you care, and then there's unhealthy expressing of worry, which will, in the end, it'll mess up your good relationship. Worry that leads you to say the wrong thing, maybe. I mean, that leads you to try to help when it's not wanted, be really kind of overpossessive or worried in a way that, you know, becomes overbearing. Because then it only sends the message, I don't trust you to figure this out. Now, you might not be trying to give that message, but that's how it will be taken by the person you're worrying about. So if someone who cares about you is worried about you, what would you rather? Well, of course you wouldn't want them to worry, or I would think that you wouldn't want them to worry, but they will because they can't help themselves. So what next? If you wanted them to stop worrying, you'd probably assure them that you're okay, right? And then after that, what would you prefer? Would you rather they assume you're lying and that you really don't want their help? Maybe they'd force their views on you. You should do this and you should do that. Or would you rather them express their concern by saying something like, I'm worried about you, what can I do to help? And then back off when you assure them that you're okay. You see the difference? The first one makes you think, man, get out of my face. But both are coming from a place of worry. Just one is helpful and healthy, and you're using a healthy means to express it. The other way, not so much. Okay, so that's one way worry can serve you, to help you express compassion and empathy and caring to others. The other way that worry can serve you is that it can be a catalyst to drive you into action. First comes the problem, then comes a bit of worry about it, which is uncomfortable. Worrying feels bad, right? You want that relief. You want relief from discomfort. So what do? Now, for me, it's go into action. I believe that this is a healthy antidote to worrying, but we'll talk more about that later. But I bring it up now because even going into action can be a problem, too, if you're not acting with awareness. Worry can stir us up. It can take us into action, but it could be ill-advised action. And just like fear, which is what most worry is derived from, remember I told you that, worry, fear, kind of same thing, it can paralyze us into inaction as well, so that we're not doing what is necessary to change or fix the situation. So worry can get us, you know, make us paralyzed. But can you imagine a life without worry? I mean, I can't. Not because I want to be a worrier, but because I've just accepted that we will have worry. Worry keeps us safe. Think about it. You'd never have caution if it wasn't for worry. Think about how you would never know that you can, you know, walk across a busy street. You have to, you know, you have to look both ways when you cross a busy street. Someone, probably your parents, instilled this rule in you. When you were about, say, 3 years old, you didn't have any worries. You most likely had someone else worrying on your behalf. Walking across the street now as an adult, you might not exactly worry about it consciously because it's second nature now, but at some point along the way, the worry was there in your mind about crossing the street safely because it was taught to you. And it has served you well, that worry for your safety, both when someone else did the worrying and later when you accepted the worry and responsibility for your own safety on yourself. So now that worry has been transformed into something useful, you call it instead caution. So you see, worry is something we can work with. We can use it wisely instead of letting it take over our response or our entire thought structure and paralyze us to make us do something unhelpful or even downright destructive. I think of it this way. Your body has a nervous system, and when it's healthy, it works this way. You hurt yourself, say, touch a hot burner on the stove. You feel pain because your nervous system is doing its job to tell you to avoid that which just caused you pain. Don't touch the hot stove. Don't do that again. The pain will also tell you, if it's bad enough, that you need to seek help. So go get someone to, you know, cover this, bandage it, go to the hospital, whatever. So can you imagine not having pain to tell you something is wrong? My sister has a damaged nervous system. This happened to her sometimes where she doesn't feel when something's wrong. Several years ago, a virus attacked her nervous system, leading her to have a neurological disorder that she now has to live with and she has to manage it. But part of the damage was partial paralysis in her extremities and partial loss of feeling in her hands and feet. On a couple of occasions, she just tells me this like nonchalantly, but to me it freaks me out. But for her it's just kind of more commonplace now. But on a couple of occasions, she's broken a toe without even realizing it. That is not until she looks down and sees her foot later in the day and says, oh my gosh, my toe is broken, because she hadn't felt it. So similar to how pain is part of the body's nervous system, worry, which comes from fear, is part of the mind's survival instinct system. When your mind has thoughts of worry, they are automatic. I have fear, and next I have worry. These are triggers for the fight, flight, you want to run, so, or maybe freeze. So that's another aspect of the fight and flight response, is that you might freeze. So worry is when you have that downtime between what caused you the fear and your actual reaction to fight, freeze, or flee. It's the part in between when you have the time to think about it. Like, you know, you sometimes will have the fear and then boom, you immediately react. No worry. It's just fear to action. But worry is when you have that downtime, when you have that time to think about it. Now, you can use this time wisely, or you can sink further into worry and not act in a helpful way. Really, your choice. So when I suggest letting go of worry, I'm not exactly saying that you should strive to eliminate it altogether. First of all, I don't think that's realistic. I don't think you can. But secondly, I'm talking about transforming it and using it, transforming it into something else, a more helpful thought, a solution to the situation, a healthier expression of caring. So there you have it. Worry allows you to show others that you care. As long as you do it in a healthy way, it can keep you safe, and it can be a catalyst to drive you into action. Basically, if you use worry wisely, it can be constructive rather than destructive. Now, let's talk about how to convert it or let it go. What are actual techniques or things you can do? One of my major sources of today's program, my reference guide to today's program, is a book by Dale Carnegie called How to Stop Worrying and Start Living. And from that book, I learned 4 great tips for dealing with and converting worry energy into something useful. This isn't like a complete synopsis of the book. I really encourage you to read the book. But I do want to share with you 4 things that I've taken away from this book, I've incorporated into my life, or at least I'm trying to incorporate into my life, to help me manage and convert the worry energy that is just a natural byproduct of being human. So here's the first one from Dale Carnegie's book. The first one that I'm going to talk about, I think it's the first one he actually has in the very first chapter. And he calls it live in day-tight compartments. What he means by this, by day-tight compartments, is that when you're worried, try to think of today as much as you can. Don't be focused on what happened yesterday, and don't be worried about what might happen tomorrow. This is timeless wisdom, isn't it? Live in day-tight compartments. It's just another way to say be present-focused, stay in the now, seize the day. Now, recently I read a fantastic article called Only the Present Moment is Real by Candace Chulu Hodge, in which she points out how Jesus understood the importance of being present. How he lived being present, and he expressed it through several of his parables. In her article, she also provides other points of view on the subject by Eckhart Tolle and by the Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh. Now, I like how she explains it. It shows what Carnegie and these other teachers mean by letting go of worry when you live in day-tight compartments or you live in the present moment. She says, quote, "Truly being present does not mean that we forsake our past, forget about planning for the future, or mouthing some empty platitudes about how wonderful life is at this moment. Often the present moment is terrible, sad, lonely, or tragic. But the present moment is all we truly own. Our past is a memory, though the cumulative force of our experience makes us what we are today. Our future is unknown, precarious, and not promised to any of us. Only in the present moment can we find our true power as human beings. Only in the present moment can we really be alive. Only in the present moment will we find our true connection to God, the source and ground of our very being." I just love that. All right, so this is where I want to take a very short break. Grab a sip of water, take a deep breath. Let's experience the present moment, since take her advice here, with some gentle music. I'm going to put some gentle music on for you. So I'll be back in just 2 minutes.